Hello, everyone. I'm the Toring, and I'd like to welcome you to my podcast, Lore of the Apocalypse. On this show, I'm going to explore the lore of Werewolf the Apocalypse. With version 5 of Werewolf and a couple of official video games all right around the corner, I thought it was a great time to refresh my memory on over 2 decades of lore while inviting others along for the ride. If you like what I'm doing or have any questions, feel free to hit me up on either Twitter or Patreon, both of which I'm the_Toring, and that's TOERING. That's enough for me. Let's get to it. Welcome back to the fire, Cub. Get comfortable, and we'll start on your next lesson. Last time we talked about the Glasswalkers, and I mentioned we'd be going over their polar opposites, the Red Talons, next. Where the Glasswalkers are known for their incredibly close ties to humanity, the Talons are best known for their legendary hatred of them. Where the Glasswalkers have almost no Lupus kinfolk and are thus almost exclusively Hamid, the Red Talons are a tribe that only accepts those born of Wolf, and in a few incredibly rare instances, those born of Tu'Garu. The Red Talons believe that they were created a little bit differently than most of the other tribes that we've covered, for like the Glasswalkers, they hold that they didn't have a member of that first pack. Unlike their city-living cousins, however, they believe that this is because they were born of Gaia herself. With the Earth Mother as mother and the primal spirit of Wolf as their father, they claim they were the only ones truly born as Garu. The true defenders of Gaia and the wild, the Talons hold that man is a being of the Weaver and Worm, and that by extension, any Garu born of him is automatically tainted by those two spirits. According to them, man started as prey, but became a predator when the Worm instigated him to kill a deer. Gaia thought that they would operate like other predators and only take the prey that they needed to survive, and spared them. But she was very wrong. Man had not been created with this instinct like the other predators. While he had become a predator later, he still only had the instincts of a man, or prey. Man fled and hid within the forest where the Worm had taught him to kill, and for many years all was quiet. Over time, though, the other predators began to leave the forest, and Gaia grew curious about this. She asked why they had left, and they said there was no food. Man had eaten it all. Shortly after, he emerged as well, but was no longer the soft prey animal he had been when he'd entered. In order to replace the fur he didn't have, he had skinned prey and wore their furs. To replace the claws he wasn't born with, he took the antlers of deer and made his own. To make up for his slowness, he hunted in great packs, driving entire herds of animals over cliffs, for he still hadn't learned about balance. He didn't understand that he should only take some prey so that they could replenish. He didn't understand that he should only have children during one season. Instead, man had continued to breed and only took what he immediately needed from the herds he killed, leaving the majority to rot. While all predators killed, man began to look at killing as a need, not much more different than the need to eat or breathe. Humans had learned to kill for more than just survival. They began to teach their young men that in order to become an adult and take a mate, they needed to kill something larger and more dangerous than themselves. Others had grown to simply enjoy the feeling of ending another creature's life. While most of the other predators fled from man, Wolf felt a kinship for them, as they both lived in packs and cared for their young. They communicated with each other like wolves did as well, so perhaps they could live in concert with each other. Perhaps Wolf could share territory and teach the humans to control their breeding and hunting. One night a wolf snuck into the human camp at night to have a look around and learn about them. As she was sniffing around, the humans awoke to find her, and she fled. The men gave chase with their antler claws, eventually tiring her and running her down, taking her skin. Other predators saw what had happened and knew that the world had once more changed. The humans, prey turned predator, had not only killed another predator, but had hunted it down as if it were prey. Gaia wept at this loss and called together the predators of nature to assign them jobs. Some small creatures, like bats and birds, were set to watch and report to their larger fellows. The lizards she asked to remember things of importance. While most held these jobs, others abandoned their tasks and became prey as punishment. When Gaia came to the wolves, she gave them a special task in recognition of their bravery and their loss in the first murder. They were assigned to be her defenders, and they were very excited at this prospect. Many of them believed that this would require them to destroy all men. Surely it would be better to have them gone, or at least made prey again. The worm was nothing if not tricky, though, and he reminded Gaia that she had not given a task to man, as they were predators after all. How were they to learn about the balance of nature without taking part in it? Gaia agreed, but didn't have any other tasks to assign them, which led Worm to make a suggestion. Allow the other animals to take human form and breed with them. This way they could learn about the balance, and man could help all of Gaia's chosen. Gaia agreed with this and granted the animals the power to turn into humans before bidding them to breed with man. All of the animals did this, including some wolves, having forgotten about the injustice of the first murder. After many generations of this, the predators couldn't help it when they began to think and act like man, forming into groups and adapting the rites and practices the humans had invented. Man continued to advance and discovered fire, which they used to drive off predators. They found they could break the will of animals and bend them to their wills, keeping them close until it was time to eat them. They took the smaller, weaker wolves and broke them as well, making them think they were part of the pack, pitting them against anything that threatened them. They broke plants, bending them to their will as well, planting huge fields of them in order to support their uncontrolled breeding. Many wolves, both those who could change into men and could not, began to gather. They believed deeply in the task that Gaia had given them and wished to see the humans destroyed and the balance restored. None of them had sullied themselves by breeding with man, and they decided to wipe these humans out. Well, many other tribes called this the Impurgium, the Red Talons call it what it really was, the First War. This was not an attempt to reduce the numbers of humans and keep them in check, nor was it a way to get revenge, at least not at first. No, the First War was to be the act that restored the balance and made the tasks that Gaia had assigned them unnecessary. The wolves went on the hunt, and when they reached the first cluster of human homes, they took on the war form granted by Gaia and advanced as one. As the men in that camp saw them, one came forward and took on the shape of a silver wolf. He snarled that these humans were under his protection and were not to be harmed. The pack moved on to the next village, where a pitch black werewolf told them the same. Over many months, they found some groups unguarded and slayed them, while others were protected by Garu or other predators. Eventually, one of them had a dream that showed mankind living in huge, sprawling settlements that nearly covered Gaia's entire surface. No matter what they did, unless they purged all of mankind, they would never stop breeding and would eventually destroy Gaia. The First War could never end if there was to be any hope. From then on, rather than approaching in full force and facing the Garu or others that protected a settlement, they would sneak in at night and take a few humans when they became too numerous, this being the Impurgium that the other tribes talk about. At this time, there was no tribe, but simply a group of wolves and Garu that believed in what they were doing. They culled the humans, never breeding with them, and only taking on their form out of curiosity or necessity. During this time, they came to the conclusion that those who bred with man grew up with a human mind, but not a wolf's heart. The wolf heart is natural and innate, but the human mind can be learned. In this way, they determined that those Garu born of man were weaker and always had been. Many Garu had been seduced by the humans and their ways. their words and language. The human-born decided the first war had to end. Over the time of the war, tribes had formed around the humans, and they called a great moot to discuss ending it. It was during this moot that the litany was written, each tenet having to be approved by each of the tribes. The votes of the wolf-born, however, were not counted, because they didn't have a tribe of men, and were assumed to be from some far-off tribe and ignored. As the litany was finalized and prepared to be sent out to the tribes, an Arun of the Wolfborn howled that they had not been heard. How would they control the humans if they couldn't kill them? Told that he needed a tribe and a name, he slashed his claws across the chest of another and declared himself a Red Talon before leaving the meeting. He recognized the leader was stronger than him and wouldn't fight his decree. Imperium and First War was over without an answer to that question. Wolves have no need of time, but it still rolled on with the Talons continuing to cull humans where they could, including during the War of Rage, which they didn't really fully understand. On through time, the tribe remained mostly unchanged, killing any humans that came near their lands, but for the most part holding to the litany as directed for fear of the other tribes' disapproval. Long before the other tribes realized the coming apocalypse, the Red Talons saw it and knew that it was humanity that would bring it about. Try as they might, though, they couldn't get the ruling tribes to listen until it was far too late. Long have the Red Talons known that Gaia was dying, and long had they howled warnings about it. However, these howls also come with a call for genocide that many of the other tribes cannot stomach. Enough about history, though. Let's move on to their tribal organization and moots. The biggest difference, of course, is the fact that they have no human kinfolk. The tribe is made up only of lupus-born Garu, and as I said earlier, a few incredibly rare third breeds. Much like the wolves with which they exclusively mate, they have no real rituals, with the strongest leading, the others following. As for their kinfolk, wolves are making slow comebacks in some areas, but they are still very rare and sparse, meaning the Garu that breed with them are as well. Finally, we come to their tribal totem of Griffin. Griffin remembers those species lost to extinction and mourns each and every one of them. This has kindled a terrible rage against humans, the slayers of entire species, that he shares with his chosen, the Red Talons. Always hunting, always hungry, Griffin embodies the swift, silent hunter. His rage against humans is so great that his followers cannot willingly associate with humans, and he has yet to accept a pack containing a Hamid Garu. In summary, the Red Talons are a proud tribe of almost exclusively wolf-born Garu who follow a totem with a deep hatred towards humanity. They believe that humans, and by extension Garu that are born of them, are innately tainted by the touch of both the worm and the weaver. They see themselves as the purest form of Garu, and thus the rightful champions and defenders of Gaia. I'll leave it up to you to decide if there is truth in their claims, as I think I've talked quite enough for the night. Next time we get together, we'll shift gears as we discuss the Shadow Lords, a tribe known as much for their political might as their secretive manipulation. Until then, tuck in, and don't let the worm bite.
That's it for this week's episode of Lore of the Apocalypse. If you have any comments or suggestions, reach out to me on either Twitter or Patreon by searching for the_toe ring. Thank you all for listening, but a very special thanks goes to my patrons, Bambi Parsons, The Primogen, and Alex M. Without your support, the battle for Gaia would have already been lost.